All right. Thank you so much, everyone, coming back. Welcome back from your coffee break. Before we get into our first session, just a quick reminder that you can submit any question that you like to our speaker via the wonderful Be More Digital app. So make sure you have that downloaded and we will get to those questions. So we'll be kicking off with a much hyped topic today. We'll be getting into generative AI, demystifying it and looking into its applications for charities. We have a wonderful speaker today, Phil Dearson, who is the digital director at WPNC Digital. He's an industry expert, bringing a range of experience to the charity sector, including from the entertainment industry, gaming industry, auto industry, the list goes on. So we're in excellent hands today. So if you could all give me a hand, welcoming Phil up to the stage.
Thank you very much. Hello. One, two. Clicker. Good morning. My name's Phil. I'll introduce myself in a minute. I won't go mad. This is a topic which is frankly making me never to want to log into any social platform ever again because I'm just... My feeds are completely inundated with talk about chat GPT this, chat GPT that. So what I'm going to do today is focus very much on here are some very practical things that you can do that will be of benefit to your organization. But first, hello.
Hello.
My name's Phil. I head up all digital activity at an agency called WPNC. My board of directors will be very cross with me if I don't tell you a little bit about WPNC, so I'll just do that really quickly. So we only work with charities and nonprofits. So we have unique experience across your unique issues, let's put it that way. From a digital point of view, we offer four things. Insight, so what can we learn or know about the people that you care about most, the people that you serve, whether inside or outside your organization. Strategy, given the multifarious different things you could potentially do with digital, what are the right ones for you? And then the easy stuff, development, so making things, and marketing, telling people things. That was it. So today I'm going to talk about generative AI. We need to get some definitions out of the way first, unfortunately, because I'll be referring back to these later on. There may be a quiz. There is no quiz. So first of all, what AI isn't. The first thing to say about this is there is no such thing as AI. AI is not a thing. It doesn't exist. AI is a field of study. It's like physics or chemistry. So if you have somebody who works in marketing coming up to you saying, yes, we're using an AI for that, no, they're not. That's a bit similar to them saying, we're using a physics for that, or we're using a chemistry for it. It's like, no, AI is a field of study. So what is AI? I did ask AI for a visual representation of what AI is, and it was shit, frankly. So I went with this instead. So AI is a set of nested fields of study, like Matryoshka dolls. Oh, it is doing my text. Excellent. Going to have some fun messing with that algorithm. Matryoshka. Yeah, it's close. AI, algorithmic intelligence. Matryoshka doll. So if AI is the big fat Matryoshka doll, let's just call it a doll, I'm doing my head in. If AI is the big doll, it contains a number of little dolls within it. And these are all different fields of study. So the first one inside it is machine learning. Machine learning is part of the field of AI. Within machine learning, then you have things like neural networks, for example. And within neural networks, you have all sorts of other smaller, more specific computational models. I'm not going to go through all of those today. You may be glad to hear. So machine learning, what is machine learning? Machine learning is something that you train a set of very complex algorithms to do. So you feed these algorithms with data sets. So you'll take a huge amount of data. Well, it doesn't have to be huge, actually. So you'll take a data set. Let's say this is a bunch of survey responses from an online questionnaire that you did like last Thursday. You might take all of those responses and then feed them to a set of machine learning algorithms who will then try to derive some meaning from it. And the sort of meaning that machine learning tries to get at is classification. So it's trying to classify things. That's what machine learning really is at its most basic level. Is this a picture of a cat? Is this sentence where you've asked somebody how you feel about the weather, for example, or the cost of living crisis, is this sentence genuine, you know, generally positive or negative? What is this sentence about? So it's trying to classify these bits of information. Now, you can try this for yourself. It's quite simple these days. You can go to somewhere like MonkeyLearn, for example. Just a quick show of hands, who's heard of MonkeyLearn? One, two, three, about three people. Okay, there you go. I've just made MonkeyLearn a load of money. MonkeyLearn.com. It's a very simple web-based SaaS product for machine learning. I often use it when we're doing things like market research and I want to get to the insights quickly. Or I don't want to have to build a manual code frame from all of those open-ended responses. You know where people have said, just tell us in your own words X, Y, and Z. You can take that data, put it into MonkeyLearn. MonkeyLearn will then say 20% of the responses are about this, 15 are about this, 5 are about this. It's very, very cheap, very, very easy to use. Don't need any programming skills. Machine learning. The sort of algorithms that we're talking about here, though, with things like GPT and its chat-based interface, ChatGPT, there, I said it, are operating on much, much bigger data sets than that spreadsheet of survey responses that you accumulated last Thursday. It's operating on terabytes of data, or petabytes of data, even. So we've got billions and billions and billions of text-based entries, and then the algorithms are looking at that in order to try and classify stuff. So this could be parts of speech. It could be gender, say, if we're looking at French. It could be what does poetic mean? It could be, is this to do with a particular science? What science is it about? And so on and so on. But with machine learning, we're not restricted to text. That particular approach is called the development of a large language model. We'll come back to that in a minute. So most of these text-based algorithms that we're looking at the moment that claim to be AI are actually large language models. But it's not just text. You can feed a machine learning algorithm a whole bunch of imagery, for example, and then it will start to say which ones are cats. This is the sort of work that started back in the 1930s, so it's been around for a while. Is this a cat? Is this impressionism? Is this a building? How many people are in this picture? And so on. So it's starting to classify things, but it works just as well with audio. Is this piece of music by Bizet? And so on and so on. Is this jazz? Large data sets, machine learning algorithms classify stuff, which brings us to generative AI, which is what I'm talking about today, if there's any time left with my preamble. Generative AI, this is all the stuff that you're seeing in your news feeds at the moment. GPT is a form of a generative AI. So what generative AI tools are doing is they're taking all of that finding, all that classification that the machine learning has done, said, this is Bizet, this is impressionism, that's a sad person, that's a sausage, not sure what it's doing there. And they're looking at that stuff, and then they're comparing that with something else, another data set, and they're generating something which is composed of the two. So for an image, for example, it might say, okay, this is a picture of a bunch of people at a conference. These things over here fall into the category of impressionism. And so a generative AI, you'd be able to say, create an impressionist painting of people at a conference. And it would create something new from comparing those two disparate data sets. And with music, it might do something like, You know, this is jazz and this is the sound of a duck. So combine those two things and give me duck jazz. Just gonna, excellent, duck jazz is now a thing. Generative AI can be text-based stuff. It can be audio-based stuff. It can be video, so you can create unique videos. You know, here's a video of a bunch of people speaking on stage at a conference, and here is a picture of Daffy Duck. Now combine the two, and you've got Daffy Duck speaking at a conference, because it will combine those two things. Might be more entertaining. What other stuff can you do with it? There's lots of other things. It's not confined to one form of media. So all this talk about ChatGPT really is looking at text-based stuff. So I like to think of these generative AI tools as recombination machines. That's what they're doing. They're taking a bunch of maybe disparate stuff and merging it all together and coming out with something new. But it's a combination of stuff that already exists. It already existed, even though it might be in a range of different data sets, of different media types. Clear so far? Some nods? Okay, well, it's gonna get worse. These are probably the most commonly known generative AI tools out there at the moment. So GPT, DALL-E, Midjourney, Google Bard, and Meta Llama. GPT stands for generative, see where we are there? Generative, pre-trained. It's been trained on loads of data sets already. It doesn't need your data. It's already been trained on loads and loads of other data. So generative, pre-trained, transformer. That's the recombination bit. It's transforming these disparate bits of information, data more specifically. GPT, DALL-E, Midjourney, Google Bard, Meta Llama. Don't worry, this is not an interactive exercise. Could you just put your hand up if you've had hands-on play with one of those? Okay, keep your hand up if you've had a hands-on play with two of those. Excellent, and keep your hand up if you've had a hands-on play with three of those. Okay. Well, guy in the green jumper should be up here with me. Come on, no. It's like dancing with the ugly sisters at the panto. So GPT, text transformer. ChatGPT is just a chat-based interface into the GPT algorithms. It's nothing new. It's nothing special in its own right. GPT, that's the clever bit. ChatGPT is just a chat-based interface on top. DALL-E is an image transformer. Midjourney is another image-based transformer. Google Bard is by Google. Can't get your hands on it yet. And Llama was just announced, I think it was the day before I put these slides together. I wanted to mention at the beginning of this presentation, actually, that I did these slides on Monday and it's already out of date. So, I mean, everything is moving so fast. So, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. This is the ChatGPT interface. For those of you that haven't seen it, you just get a little chat box down the bottom and you can ask questions. So you can type your question in and say, what is the most famous sausage in the world? I don't know why I've got sausages on the brain today. Probably I'm on a very restrictive diet. What is the most famous sausage in the world? Or popular sausage? Enough with the sausages. What I did put in here was, what's the best way of describing AI or generative AI to people at a conference about digital in charities? And it came up with some stuff, but you know, whatever. One thing worth noting, that this is a web-based interface onto the GPT assets, if you like. You can use all sorts. You know, you can create a Siri shortcut if you're using an iPhone, which, as long as you've got an API key into OpenAI's stuff, which costs about $15 a month, doesn't cost much, you could just be saying, hey Siri, tell me the most popular sausage in the world. You could do that anywhere and impress your friends. You can do it in Google Sheets. So you can just say, bring me in the most highly populated cities in Devon, which is probably a short list, and pop those automatically into your spreadsheet. So there are all sorts of other interfaces into this information. This just happens to be a chat-based one. DALL-E, again by OpenAI, is a image-based generative AI. These are, in fact, impressionist paintings of people at a conference. So that's you there. With a lot of these generative tools, the ones that are, they allow you to put a prompt in. The prompt is the thing that you write in the text box to describe the output that you're trying to get. And prompt engineering is now a new skill, which some of you may have heard of. We will slightly come back to that in a minute, but there's a great example here on Midjourney. So Midjourney is, just a quick show of hands, who has had a hands-on play with Midjourney? It's a bit more difficult to get into. Okay, so Midjourney only operates inside a Discord server. So a Discord is a chat, it's a bit of a weird choice, I have to say, for an interface, but there you go. You go to midjourney.com and you sign up. That gives you access to this special Discord server where people chat about stuff. You put your query in as a chat box, and initially it will come back with four images corresponding to what you're talking about. So the mouse thing we've got there, I should have cropped this a bit better, but you know. The query there was something along the lines of, you know, show me some line drawings of a mouse. Drawing of a mouse licking, sticking out its tongue. There we go, that's what that is. And Midjourney comes back with four images, and you can then select one of those as almost like a branching route to further explore this particular image style. That's an interesting one. I'm more interested in that. Tell me more about that one. Show me more about that thing. That's quite a lot of the generative AI interfaces at the moment allow you to do that interrogative type engagement, where you can ask for more information about the thing you've just been told. So this is great, a great line, a great paragraph of text about being at a conference. Tell me more about the cost of living element, and then it will refine it further. Tell me more about working inside a charity, and it'll tell you more about that. So you can query the response to your first query and so on, it just goes on. The thing I wanted to draw out here though was the one underneath. Now can you see there's a really, really long prompt above that picture, and I haven't got my glasses so I can't see it, but I know it says something like create a picture of a young Asian girl. Is it a young Asian girl? Thank you, you've got better eyes than me. European beautiful blonde woman in her 20s walking down an alleyway in the Netherlands with an Asian man with their backs towards the photograph. You know, it's being really, really specific here. There's a scent of roses in the air. It doesn't say that. But the thing that was really caught my eye on this one was it's a photograph with the details of the cityscape. The camera used will be a Canon 5D Mark IV with a setting of f8, 1 to 200 and 150 to 400. It's a telephoto lens or something like that. So you can be really very specific here now with these prompts. We'll come back to this again in a moment. Yeah, I mean, just hurry up a little bit. Anyway, the prompt is the skill here. Google Bard, you can't get access to yet. It's in beta, invite only. Meta Llama was only announced, as I say, the day before I put the slides together, so who knows. I know that one of the things they are saying about Meta Llama, though, is that it will be open source. So that means anybody will be able to use it without any kind of commercial fees. However, as we all know with Facebook, they are in the business of harvesting and then reselling our personal data. So free comes at a cost. Right, here's the meaty stuff. This might go quite fast because that preamble took longer than I thought, and we need to allow time for questions. Don't worry, there's a recording. You can just play it back at slow speed. So the benefits of generative AI for charities. The main category is being able to do more with less. Now, given the, you know, the keynote panel that I watched this morning, I imagine this might come in quite handy. And it's not really confined to charities. All organizations are going through this at the moment. We need to do more with less. These are the practical tools for being able to do that. Lots of people talking about being more efficient this morning on the panel. And what was the other thing? Working smarter. Those are great things to say, but how? How the hell are we going to do that? This is how. Draft copywriting. Here's the first one. Now, I work in an agency. There are a whole load of copywriters there, particularly for some of the TV work that we do. They are not very happy about this. So I'm going to gloss over this quite quickly. And if you could edit it out, that'd be great. But draft copywriting, having a first pass. If you've got to write a presentation, I didn't use AI for this. If you've got to write a presentation, or you've got a proposal to do, or you need to put some copy on your website or an email, or you need to change the copy on your existing website to make it better optimized for search, perhaps, you can use these tools to do that job for you. Write in one sentence saying, write me some copy about our latest fundraising campaign. Here's a little bit of information about the fundraising campaign. Go. And it'll come out with stuff which does a creditable first pass. It's not bad. It'll speed up the process. It's not a replacement for human ingenuity and creativity at all. But we can just pop back to our maybe I should not have done this, recombination machines. There is an argument, if you look at neuroscience, where does human creativity come from? It comes from all the things that we've been exposed to across our lifetimes. We're constantly forming connections between one thing and another thing. So maybe our creativity really is a form of biological recombination machine. AI doesn't come anywhere near that at the moment. So it does a good first pass. Whistle amongst yourselves, I'll do this. There we go. Draft copywriting. Saves you time. You're doing more with less. Next one, campaign asset automation. So you've maybe come up with some ideas for a campaign. You're like, okay, we really need to get some assets made now. It's going to be a pain. You can just go to one of the image generation tools and say, create some campaign assets for this. They're going on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Oh, can we have a banner as well? Boom. And then it will generate a whole gallery for you to start working with. Now, these may be slightly rubbish, and they won't be, you know, they won't be perfect on the first go, but they will accelerate that process. Think of them as a tool to help you with the creative and production process. They're not a replacement for it. Code. If you need to put a custom bit of JavaScript on your website to do X, ask ChatGPT. It's great. Just go there and say, I need a bit of JavaScript that will display a countdown banner from this time to this date and end with a flurry of confetti, and hit go, and it will give you the JavaScript for doing that. It's pretty cool. I've been using ChatGPT to help me as a kind of a code buddy for a while now. It started off with me joining WPNC about 3 months ago and inheriting the spreadsheet of doom. Now, I know every organization has a spreadsheet of doom in it somewhere, but I inherited this one. And there were just so many complex formulae in it. I was like, So I would copy the formula, put it in ChatGPT and say, what's this all about? And it would then explain the entire formula to me. And then I would say, okay, well, actually, it'd be better if it did this. And I would describe to ChatGPT what I wanted the spreadsheet to do. And it would say, use this formula instead. I'll cut and paste. So that works very well. I have friends who've created WordPress plugins entirely using ChatGPT as a code buddy. And there are other tools. It's not just ChatGPT. So GitHub, for example, if any of you or your teams are using GitHub, there's a great tool called Copilot, which sits there and will suggest what snippets of code you should be using to try and achieve the thing that you are trying to achieve. Technical support. If you've got a bunch of people inside your organization who are, you know, you've got a bottleneck in IT and people are constantly saying, how the hell do I do this? Train one of these generative algorithms on your IT processes and setup. And then people can just go and ask ChatGPT. It's like, how do I get a purchase order for X? How do I requisition a projector? How do I deal with this error message on my screen? Boop. It'll tell them. Doing more with less. That's what this is all about. We're not replacing anybody here. Internal training, similarly. If you've got a whole bunch of onboarding materials that you need for new people or volunteers, you need to get them up to speed very, very quickly, direct your generative algorithms at your existing data set of training materials or procedures or processes or documentation. And then people can just ask questions of the generative AI rather than having to arrange a meeting a week next Thursday because everyone's too busy. Brainstorming ideas. This is something that we've experimented with to lesser or greater degrees of success. But again, if you need an idea for a campaign, for example, you can say, okay, we need a bloody Q3 campaign, a summer thing, something to tie in with this event. Oh, we're doing, I don't know, King, there's going to be a King or something, I don't know. Give me some ideas. And then it will list out a bunch of ideas for you. They'll be rubbish, but they're a starting place. There might be something in there which makes you think, oh, hang on, we could just investigate that bit. That sounds good. Tell me more about this and change that. I don't like these words. And it will come up with some other ideas. It can help you come up with ideas for products, new products, for example, product development. You know, given that we want to appeal to these sorts of people who behave in the following way, and they have these sorts of social or personal circumstances, suggest some things that they might find interesting to engage with that our organization can reasonably deliver. Boop. And that'll come up with some rubbish ideas for you, but there'll be something in there that you can follow up. Creating presentations. I should have used this for this presentation rather than just putting a couple of words on each slide, but I'd rather you listen to what I'm saying than read stuff off a screen, to be honest. But there are loads of generative algorithms now that can take an outline for your presentation, paste it in, say, create me a presentation, boom, it'll generate all the slides and all the pictures and format it for you. Who wants to waste time making slides? I don't. Strategy Buddy. Now, my background is a strategy person in digital, helping people figure out what should we do? You know, what's worth our time and effort? One of the things I found very useful as a strategist, it's very easy, particularly if you're a strategist working on your own sometimes, it's very easy to just believe yourself, believe your own hype and go, I've had some great ideas, I'm brilliant. What GPT is particularly good at is if you take your hypothesis and put it in there, you can say, argue for the hypothesis. And then it will come up with a whole bunch of reasons why your idea is brilliant. And then if you say, argue against the hypothesis, it'll come up with a whole bunch of reasons why your idea is just, you know, shit. So that acts as a bit of a kind of intellectual sparring partner for you there. And it helps you see, I'm starting to see more sides of this picture than maybe I would have done on my own because of my own, you know, personal bias. Prompt creation. So thinking of that prompt that was used in Midjourney with the camera focal length and all that kind of stuff. If you don't know anything about cameras and focal lengths, I don't. I don't even know if focal length is the right term to be using. Sounds right. You can use a GPT or something similar to create a prompt for another tool. So write me a prompt for Midjourney that will return a photo which looks like a scene from Blade Runner with a sausage in it. There's another sausage thing. But so you don't need to become an expert on prompt writing if you can use another tool to help you with that process. You don't need to learn how to write prompts for every single tool. Going faster. Fundraising effectiveness is the next category, how these generative AI tools can help. I'm going to go quite fast now. Understanding potential donors. If you have a data set, which of course you do, you'll have a donor database or a sponsor database somewhere, you may have a CRM system, you may even just have done some qualitative or quantitative research, you can use that data as training data for a generative algorithm, and the algorithm will do the so what part of the research for you. So a lot of the time, if you're working as a strategist or a planner on the agency side, you get a lot of pressure to, yeah, but what's the insight? What's the insight? The insight is just, what does the data tell us? What did we learn from the data? So you can give the data to a generative algorithm, and the generative algorithm will say, okay, well, based on this, here are some things which you might find interesting. And it will summarize. It will summarize that data set or part of it, whatever bit of it you want to summarize, and tell you the stuff that's genuinely useful for you. It may even raise some questions that it needs to answer, or it may, in fact, depending on the tool you're using, compare your data set to a universe of other data sets. So what do we know about these people? So here's our data. Here's what we know about our sponsors. What else do we know about these people and their lives? And it will consult the universe of other data sets and then tell you. So it will flesh out what you know about people. you can then use generative AIs to develop your content strategy. So there are some tools which you can go now and say, all right, here is my campaign idea, here are some sample assets, hit a button, and it will just develop a content strategy saying, for these sorts of people, you want to use these sorts of assets in these sorts of channels to get the best response possible. Need to go faster. Enforce consistency across your organization. This can be for tone of voice, if it's something like copywriting, not using this particular word if you're worried about, I don't know, white savior complex, some organizations are, and even in terms of brand look and feel. So you can just set some branding guidelines inside a generative AI tool that does images, and it will then apply that consistency across all future assets. Answer donor questions. Say you've got a data set which is full of, say, your website data. So you've trained it on your website data. You have it as a little chat interface on your website. It can answer questions about any aspect of your organization that you feed into it. Kiki's getting ready to wave at me. You know, it's a wink, it's fine. Automate propensity models. Okay, we're sort of slightly stepping outside the realms of fundraising here, but it's really hard to keep the potential of the, you know, the genuine practical potential of these tools just limited to fundraising. And in fact, I couldn't help myself, so I've kind of slightly gone out the channel a little bit in a minute. Propensity models are incredibly useful. They allow you to laser target your spend when you're trying to attract new people of a similar kind of type. Great thing about generative AI tools is they will allow you, based upon propensity models that already exist, or even just donation data. So you've got a spreadsheet, these sorts of people donated this kind of stuff in response to these sorts of campaigns. You can train a generative AI on that information, and then it will say, okay, to find more of these people, or rather, here are a whole bunch of other sorts of people, and this is their propensity to donate to this sort of campaign, this sort of campaign, and this sort of campaign. Here's the winning kind of campaign that you should be doing, or the sort of activity that you should be undertaking to activate that sort of sponsor type. Last category of things is prioritization and decision making. This is something that, when resources are tight, I think we've all been there, is absolutely of critical importance. What things should we focus on and prioritize when we've only got a tiny amount of money? Reporting is something that takes a huge amount of time. If you use generative AI, you can automate pretty much your entire reporting process about campaign success. So I'm dealing with a lot of charities at the moment, and reporting across all the various different donation platforms that they're using and all the different campaigns and the 45 different spreadsheets that they've got going internally, and oh yeah, that's a new CRM system that's coming next year, or maybe the year after, or the year after that. It's very, very hard for them to do reporting. You can train a generative AI to deal with that level of complexity, pull in the data from all these different sets, and then present a visualization of the stuff that's important to you. Evaluate fundraising ideas. So if you're coming up with ideas, you have information already about who's most important to you, what their propensity to take action is, etc. You can then, whenever somebody comes up with an idea, you can just pop it into a generative AI and say, evaluate this idea, and it will come back with whatever kind of response you have trained it to come back with, like a percentage scale score. Yes, this is 100% likely, or the probability is extremely high that this one is going to achieve your fundraising objectives. This one is a duck. Automate campaign management. So once you've got your fundraising idea, your campaign in place, there are some tools out there which do allow you to use generative AI tools to set up, create the assets for, buy the media for, and then run and report on your entire campaign. Prioritize internal initiatives. This is nothing to do with fundraising, but this is the sort of stuff that I've done in the past. Say you need, make some changes in your organization. So you've got your business as usual fundraising activity, but also there's an imperative to do a range of digital transformation, in inverted commas, programs or initiatives. You can use generative AI to feed all of those competing priorities into something which is evaluated by the same set of criteria, and it will very, very clearly say, to achieve the objectives of the organization and serve the needs of the people that we care about, these are our priorities. I made a tool that does that, by the way. It's not a sales pitch. Last thing to talk about here, tasks, not roles. Generative AI is not going to be getting rid of anybody's roles. What it will do is get rid of some tasks. It'll get some tasks off your plate. If your role happens to be made up of a whole bunch of tasks, every single one of which can be automated, then learn to write prompts. Getting started, first, just act like a child, go and have a play. Here's some URLs. Chat at openai.com. Labs is where DALL-E lives. Midjourney.com, you sign up there, you'll get access to the Discord server. Then, do the grown-up, sorry, go on. Okay, then do this. This is being a bit more like a grown-up. Clarify your objectives. What are the objectives of our organization? Not what are objectives for fundraising. What are the objectives for the organization? Be crystal clear and establish the relative importance of those priorities. They're not all going to be equal. Just recognize it, get on with it. Decompose processes. Start to identify where you have a sequence of events, then start to chunk those events into smaller and smaller parts. Those are the tasks that we're talking about using generative AI to support or take on. Evaluate tools. Now you know what your tasks are. Go and evaluate the constellation of tools out there that will allow you to address one of these particular tasks. Then prototype. Start creating a very, very basic version of your process that has generative AI taking on some of those tasks. If you want to know where to get started, go to producthunt.com, put AI in the search box. You'll get about 4,500 different AI tools out there. They're all Gen AI. Things to watch out for, going to go really, really quickly. Availability, a lot of these are connected to the internet. Some of them are in beta. They're not going to be consistently available unless you pay lots of money. Inaccuracy, they're not always right. Bias, the data sets that some of the bigger tools are trained on are the data sets available to us as humanity. They're being trained on society's data sets. Society is full of bias. The tools are therefore full of bias. So you need to look out for it. Recency, as I've forgotten his name, the guy who opened the ceremonies for us this morning. Tools like ChatGPT in particular, or GPT, don't have data for the last year or so. So if you're asking it for, you know, what's the best function to use in a Google Apps script, then it's going to come up with a whole bunch of functions that have been deprecated for the last year and replaced by something new. So you need to watch out for it. Bland is really, really easy with generative tools. And unique is quite hard. That's where you need to just get into the nuance of crafting the prompt, and you are the product. The stuff you generate with generative AI is, across most instances, going to be fed back into the machine learning algorithms to inform future decisions it wants to make. So be wary of it. Parting thoughts and then questions. 1 minute of questions. Learn to craft the prompt. This is your chisel. This is your toothbrush. Sure. This is your toothbrush, your paintbrush, when you're working with generative AI. So learn to craft the prompt. Next one, beauty is in the eye of the definer. So be very, very careful when you're using qualitative terminology with these tools, like show me something good. Who's to say what good is? I'll tell you who's to say what good is. Society at large, the data set that it was just trained on, that tells you what good is, and that's going to be full of bias. Show me something beautiful. You can guess what it's going to come up with, right? Humanity lies in the imperfections. So these generative AI tools, they're all focused on trying to be as human-like as possible. However, they're trying to become more and more professional. And that professionalism is kind of eking out the weirdness. It's eking out the weirdness and the edge cases and the strangeness. That's where humanity lies. It's in the bits in between. So something you need to be aware of. And serve people, not algorithms. I've been saying this since search engines were invented. If you create content that appeals to people, and serves their needs, it's genuinely useful and genuinely helpful, it will end up rising to the top, because the algorithmic tools will have to serve people's needs. They will have to find that content. They will have to use it. Otherwise, they'll become obsolete themselves. Serve people, not algorithms. And the last point. This is the end of the beginning, to be a bit Churchillian about it. The beginning of the beginning has been going on for about 50 years, really. We're over that now. This is going to start entering the mainstream. Start having a play, start adopting some of these tools and adding them to your workflow.